Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 124, and we are in John 5 and verse 44. Well, last time we mentioned the fact that Jesus Christ was saying that the people, his own people, members of his own wife, who should have known the law, should have walked in it, who should have believed in it, and he's not talking, mind you, but the people that followed him, the majority that followed him, you see, wherever he went, acknowledge him as the son of David, acknowledge him as the son of God. But this discourse here that you find in these chapters, and much of what he was talking about and talking to, were leaders that should have known better. Minority, small number of them. And they did not have. They who are the high and the mighty, and they are to this very day. They are the least faithful to God, to his truth, to his righteousness. They are the ones that pervert, generally speaking, the righteousness of God, the truth of God, the teachings of God, and so mislead others. And yet, in spite of what they've done, people did not follow them. You see, when Jesus Christ appeared, they followed him, not them. And he tells them that they do not seek the honor that comes from the only God, the God who is above the heavens, the heaven of heavens. The Psalms, as it's called, Elohe Elohim. In other words, a God who is a God of gods. And he's above all. And so that's what he's saying here. The honor that comes from the only God. He's not preaching monotheism. He's only one God, period. What he's saying here, when you understand the biblical teachings, when your eyes are open, that there is the El Elyon, the Most High, and there is him. And all those who are going to follow in his footsteps, and he's going to bring many sons to glory, they too shall enter into this very family of the divine, you see, family of God, Elohim, and they too shall become Elohim. That's their destiny. From the moment that God created them, he created them in his image and in his likeness, first in the flesh, in the clay. You see, that was a mold, and he put his spirit in them. This is where it came from, the spirit in man. The Creator, Jesus Christ, and then the Father begets him, and they become his sons also, and Christ is fully formed in them, and then they become just like Christ. And they're born into his kingdom, and they sit on his throne, you see, as divine beings, and they see him as he is. Now, most people don't believe that, because the leaders blinded their minds and eyes, because they themselves are blinded, and they are not willing to acknowledge it. You see, blind people, spiritually, do not like to acknowledge that. But one day, you know, the day is coming very near when Jesus Christ is going to descend upon this earth, expose all the false religions upon this earth, all the lies and deceptions, all the false teachings of humanity, of the great whore and the harlots, you see, of all of the religions of this earth and all the vomit and lies that are in them, including Judaism, you see, which is based mostly on rabbinic Judaism and superstitions and unclean spirits. Yet most people are not aware of that. What do they know? They don't study the Word of God to be illuminated by it. They just follow man. They give honor to man. And the honor of those leaders come from man, not from God. God does not recognize them as his. And so he says in verse 45, "Do not think that I shall accuse you to the Father. Christ is not the accuser of the brethren. There is one who accuses you, Moses, in whom you trust." How is it that Moses accuses Israel? Moses gave the law to Israel, which he received from God. And when Israel departs from the law of Moses, you see, so, metaphorically, Moses accuses Israel because they are not obedient to the law that he gave them. And when you read Moses, you read his words, as he told them, at the end of the 40 years, from that day that I have known you, you have been rebellious against God. And from the beginning of time, God never gave you a heart to understand, eyes to see, ears to hear, until this day. And he called them a foolish generation. Without wisdom, they were constantly rebellious. A whole generation had to be destroyed in the wilderness, were not allowed into the land. And the generation that entered were not much better, you see, because it says a generation after them, they haven't done their job properly. They too had problems like their parents, but were not as bad. You see, they believe that God will help them in entering into the land and conquer the, and you know, he would conquer the land for them or help them conquer the land. So they were allowed in. They were under 20, you see, at the time when the spies refused to enter into the land. So God said they will enter into the land, but it does mean that they were perfect human beings. They were not. They had a lot of problems. Moses recounted their problems too, you see. And all his words at the end of the book of Deuteronomy is aimed at these people that he was going to bring into the land of Israel through Joshua. And a generation after Joshua, it says there arose another generation after the death of Joshua and the elders that did not know the Lord. You see? So Moses is accusing Israel. Of course, some people in the Jewish community, you know, every time they hear somebody saying something against them, they think, oh, you're anti-Semite. Well, if this is the criteria for anti-Semitism, so is God, and so is Moses, and so are all the prophets. All they have to do is read what they say, and they said things which are much, much worse, oftentimes, than many anti-Semites. It had nothing to do with anti-Semitism. It's anti-evil, wherever it's found. Anti-wickedness, anti-rebellion. Unless we are willing to admit that and stop playing these kind of games, anti-this and anti-that, just look at the mirror of the law. You see, if we're transgressors of the law, this is what we are. As Jeremiah would say, the heart is deceitful above all things. And you read all the words of David, very few good words that he said about his own people, very few good words by God or Moses or the prophets about the people of Israel. It has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. Some people in their foolishness, you know, that's the first thing they say. And nobody likes to be corrected in any given nation. You know, if you say the same thing about the people of India, they'll tell you are anti-Indian. How about looking in the mirror of the law and seeing yourself for what you are and acknowledging it and repenting? Now, people don't like to do it. And so he says, you know, don't think that I'm the one who's going to accuse you, because he came to die for them and redeem them, not to accuse them. But the law accuses them, you see, just like he said to his own people, I'm not going to be the one to judge you, ultimately speaking, it's the word, the law, Moses, you see. In other words, when he transgresses the law of God is going to stand against you and accuse you, and you're going to be found guilty. That's what it means. So he says, Moses accuses you in whom you trust, for if you believed Moses, you would believe me. For he wrote about me. And they did not believe Moses. Again, speaking about the leadership. He's not talking about the people. And a lot of people read that and never dawn on them to think properly. He's not talking to the people. He's talking to the minority that were rebellious. All over the place you see the multitudes followed him, worshipped him, praised him, honored him, glorified him. You see, bowed the knees before him, acknowledged him as the Son of God, as the Savior of Israel, you see. Again, he's addressing that to the leadership, just like today. They're still the same, the same spirit, or the same rebellious attitude. They despise Moses, they despise the law of God, they teach others to do likewise. And had he come today, would have said exactly the same thing to those very leaders, and they would have hated him for it, and if they could, they would have killed him. And so, this is what he's saying here. But if you believed Moses, you would believe me, for he wrote about me. But if you do not believe his writings, how will you believe my words? And that message is to us also to this very day. When people do not believe Moses, claiming that the law is done away with, how are they going to believe Jesus Christ? There is no way. Because Jesus Christ is the very one that gave that law to Moses. So when you don't believe Moses, you don't believe Jesus Christ. It's as simple as that. You can call yourself Christian all you want. You are just a liar through and through. That's what God calls you, not men. You see? Don't take it personally. God is the one calling you a liar. As John said, he that does not keep his commandments is a liar and the truth is not in him. That's a reality. And if people hate it today, let it be. But the day will come where they're going to hate themselves. For such deception. They're not going to accuse anybody else but themselves. You see, when their eyes are open to see the law and what they've done, how they have transgressed it all the time, never believed Moses, and therefore never believed Jesus Christ, and yet call themselves Christians, bearing false witness, liars. You see, that's what the devil has done to all of us, one degree or the other. He's the father of lies, and he taught all people to live in lie and to believe that they are in the light. You see, he's the angel of darkness, and yet he pretends to be the angel of light. His ministers are the ministers of darkness, of lies and deceptions, and they pretend to be the ministers of Jesus Christ, the ministers of righteousness. So it is throughout the face of the whole earth, because the devil deceived the whole world, and God allowed it for a purpose. You see, until the day comes when he opens the eyes of all, both the living and those that he's going to bring back from the dead, and make them understand, comprehend what is it that they were walking in, and give them the opportunity this time to do it right. In one sense, you might say they've never had the opportunity, and therefore, in that sense, he does not hold it against them. Yet, to the degree that they do understand, he holds it against us. Chapter 6, verse 1, after these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias, then a great multitude followed him, you see? In contrast to these leaders that he was talking to, who did not obey, though they claimed to be the high and the mighty and the servants of God, there you find the multitude. The great multitude followed him because they saw his signs which he performed on those who were diseased. Now they believed, but the leadership did not. And to this very day, the leadership is the most responsible for the deception on the face of the earth. They pass on the lies of the devil. They impose it on people. They stand in the gap, in the way. They would not allow people to come to the knowledge of the truth. You see, they call it evil, and they teach people that it is evil, and people follow them. They think, you know, they are the men of God. That's how the devil reigns on this earth, through his ministers. And so the great multitude followed him because they saw that he did all the signs. You know, they believed it. They had no problem with that. And Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. And now the Passover, so it's another Passover here, a feast of the Jews was near. What does it mean, a feast of the Jews? Well, feast of the people of Israel, the God of Israel. You see, he gave it to them. So it doesn't mean, you know, well, this is a Jewish feast, so we don't need it. You know, we got ahead of our own Passover, and ours is Easter. You see? Well, understand the terminology of John, who is a Jew himself. And then Jesus lifted up his eyes, and seeing a great multitude coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread that this may eat?" Why did the great multitude come to him from Israel? You see, they were willing to listen. They were willing to obey. They've had enough, you know, of all the sufferings and misery they had, of all the lies that have been taught by their spiritual leaders. It didn't lead them to God and to peace and salvation and you know, on this earth and good life, but to misery and suffering and sorrow and pain. So they constantly came to him, in contrast to the leadership that rejected him. And not even the entirety of the leadership, but there were those among them who were more poisoned in their own minds and heart, you know, more hateful, more arrogant. They were the ones that had a lot of problems with Jesus Christ. Not the majority, not the rank and file, so to speak, of the nation, of the people of God, of the, you know, the wife of Jesus Christ. And so he had compassion on them. And you see, it's not enough just to feed someone spiritually. This is the most important thing. But the fact that, you know, the mere fact that we are flesh and blood, we need to eat too. So Christ cared about both the spiritual and the physical. And there are a lot of people then that just, you know, think, well, you know, I'll just feed you spiritually, you know, and that's your problem to feed yourself. I'm not going to, you know, care about it. And they just seek, you know, the materialism to themselves. And they think that in exchange, just by giving you spiritual food, that's it. That's all there is to do. No, God is the God of the whole earth. He created us, flesh and blood, and he put a spirit in us, and he fulfills all needs of the spirit and of the flesh. And so all of us should do likewise, because he taught us to be that way. But this he said to test him. You see, when he told Philip, you know, how are we going to feed all these people? For he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may have a little. So instead of catching on to what Jesus Christ was up to and saying, well, Lord, you know, you're capable of taking care of them, you're not limited, you see. Well, he didn't say that. He just thought totally, carnally, physically. You know, he was still had a fleshly mind at the time, carnal mind. one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a lad here with 5 barley loaves and 2 small fish. But what are they among so many?" So himself that doesn't get it. Then Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in number about 5,000. That's only the men. And generally speaking, the Bible, you know, basically God generally counts the men. It's not some people, you know, especially women, who have problems because they've been abused. They think, well, you know, that's chauvinism here. It shouldn't be that way. Well, what's wrong with mentioning the women? Just like you go to the synagogue today, in the conservative and the reformed synagogues, they don't like the fact that God is the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all these statements that you constantly read there. So they added, God is the God of Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah, Jacob, Rachel and Leah. You see, so they've got the mothers also. You know, equal rights, so to speak. Well, that's the way human beings function. God generally, when he says the man, that was a generic, you see, oftentimes for the entirety of the congregation, men, women, and children. And then, many other occasions, when he said men, he's speaking basically about the household, you know, the head of the house, you see. But that included also the family. But in terms of the men of the house, there were 5,000. So the men sat down in number about 5,000, obviously with all their women and all their children. So you're talking about a huge number there. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, He distributed them to the disciples. So he takes the loaves, he gives thanks, he lifts up his eyes to heaven, you see, and his hands, giving thanks to God. That's what people today call him, you know, grace, or the blessing of food. Of course, they don't do it that way, you know, they bow down, you know. And as we mentioned earlier, when you think about it, from the point of view of God and the point of view of those who have been doing it, in accordance with the example of God, you know, that's a little bit funny. As some, you know, some people from the Jewish community, they look at other people in the Christian community that do it, and they say, well, what do you look down there? You know, God is not down there. God is up there. You see? Well, somewhere, you know, down the line, somebody came up with this custom, and everybody follows it, and to this very day, everybody does it, and you feel holy about it. You see? That's not the teaching of God. In example after example after example, Jesus Christ made it very plain. How is it that you pray to God when you give him thanks? You see? And he did it. Nobody pays attention to him, yet they call themselves Christians. That means followers of Christ. Well, how do you follow Christ if what you do is not what Christ did? You see? Do your own thing. That's because you give honor to man. That's what you're doing, and you think that you give honor to God. Well, it's not easy to unlearn things that you've done all your life that became holy in your own sight and have conviction and faith. That's why God says, you know, he's searching for those who would worship him in truth and in spirit. There aren't many there who are willing to make the, you know, drastic changes in their lives and do things as Christ would do. As some people say, what would Jesus do? There are these statements and they don't do what Jesus would do. That's a mockery. And so Jesus took the loaves and he had, as we see in other examples, he lifts up his eyes to heaven. He lifts up the 2 loaves of bread, always 2, you see. And that was a custom, still is to this very day in the Jewish community, in the Orthodox Jewish community. And they give thanks to God, and, you know, they dip it in the salt, they pass it around. And that makes, you know, the whole family there a community. They're bound together by this covenant of salt. And then, at the end, as God told Moses, when you have eaten and you are full, then you shall bless the Lord your God. It's at that time that he had the long blessing. And you thank him for the food, for life, for health, for children, for peace, for all kind of things like that, you see. Well, most people don't do it. This is one good thing that's still there in the Jewish community with all the confusion that is there along with it. And so he gave thanks and distributed to the disciples and the disciples to those sitting down. No mobbing, you know, Jesus Christ. And mob scene here is not there. You don't see it here. So it tells you an awful lot about the way we should do things. Order, you see. Not be so greedy and seek our own and try to get the best that we can, the most. And so they all sat down. That's for that reason that he told them to sit down. And likewise, all the fish, as much as they wanted. You see? They were hungry, they wanted seconds and thirds and fourths. as much as they wanted. There were plenty there, all from 5 loaves and 2 fish. Now, that sounds stupid to people. They don't believe. They have no faith. That's silly. That's unheard of. That's impossible. Of course it is, if man is the one behind it. But when God is behind it, that's a different story. So when they were filled, he said to his disciples, gather up the fragments that remain so that nothing is lost. Because you see, he gave thanks to God. This food became holy food, so to speak, in that sense. And you don't throw the holy things. And so all these remnants were all gathered, and later on they ate them. And therefore they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets. Imagine that. They had only 5 loaves and 2 fish. Now they've got 12 baskets after all these thousands and thousands ate. And yet people still have no faith. You see? That's what Christ said. When the Son of Man comes, shall he find faith among men? Well, people were not obedient. You see, these people, he told them to sit down. He's going to feed them. They sat down and he fed them. They had faith. And so they were fed. Well, what happens when we don't have faith? Well, then we've got problems. And so they had 12 baskets of the fragments, or the 5 barley loaves. That's what they were, 5 barley loaves, because that was Passover time. You know, the barley harvest was ripe at that time. The wheat came later. And so there were barley loaves, which were left over by those who had eaten. And then those men, when they had seen the sign that Jesus did, said, this is truly the prophet who is to come into the world. So they continue to walk in the faith, and therefore they're blessed. While the high and the mighty, their leaders, are not willing to, no matter what they see. And it is to them that he addresses much of his discourse, and not to the multitudes. And therefore, when Jesus perceived that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, he departed again to the mountain by himself alone. Again, you know, even though they had a measure of faith, they still were carnal. They thought carnally. Well, he's a leader. We need a leader. You know, we need to be delivered from Rome. And we're going to make him a leader, you see. That's in essence what the people do today when you go and vote for someone. By your votes, you're going to make this one a leader or that one a leader. You see. And with God, it doesn't work like that. He's the one that appoints leaders and kings and rulers and judges. You see, and he gives it also to his servants to do likewise. There's no voting there. There's no, you know, taking somebody by force. You know, we're going to make you a king whether you like it or not. And Christ was not interested in that kind of an honor, because it's not of God, it's of men. A lot of people, you know, seek the honor of men. That's what all politicians are. All their life is to seek the honor of men, so that they can exalt him, and so they can be in those positions. People do not look for, you know, the honor, you know, blessings from God. They look for those things from men. And so he didn't want to be that kind of a leader, that kind of a, you know, a servant, that kind of a king over them. Verse 16, now when evening came, his disciples went down to the sea, and they got into the boat and went over the sea toward Capernaum. It was in the Galilee, this event, and it was already dark, and Jesus had not come to them. Well, as we read another account, he still talked to the people, calmed them down, you know, still gave them some teachings, and sent them away, and the disciples were told to continue on their way, go to the other side, so they took the boat, but he came later on, and of course they did not understand at that point how is it going to happen, and when they did, well, this is what we read here. And then the sea arose, it was dark, and Jesus had not come to them. Then the sea arose because a great wind was blowing, which is pretty common in the Sea of Galilee, and they were in the boat, scared to death at this point. So when they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on the sea and drawing near the boat. They were afraid. You see? Why were they afraid? Well, things like that don't happen. You see? So when they see somebody walking on the sea, obviously you're going to be afraid. But he said to them, it is I. Do not be afraid. Now, what need did he have to do that? You know, was it just a show that he was putting on for them? No, his disciples had a problem. Until the end, they had a problem. Until the resurrection, they had a problem with faith. And you have a problem with faith when you have a problem with obedience. You see, and obedience is not only to laws that tell you to do this or do that, but also to law that tells you believe. That's a command. And they had a problem with believing. And many of us have a problem with believing, in waiting on God and trusting in Him. You see? In spite of all that he had done, his own disciples constantly had problems. Well, if they had problems, how much more those who didn't have a relationship with him? Verse 21, then they willingly received him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land where they were going. Hey, another miracle. Suddenly, you know, the boat moved all the way to the edge of the water when it was in the middle of it. On the following day, when the people who were standing on the other side of the sea saw that there was no other boat there, except that one which the disciples had entered, and that Jesus had not entered the boat with the disciples, but his disciples had gone away alone. However, other boats came from Tiberias near the place where they ate bread after the Lord had given thanks. When the people, therefore, saw that Jesus was not there, nor his disciples, they also got into the boats and came to Capernaum seeking Jesus. These are people who are leaving their jobs, who are leaving their professions, who are leaving, you know, their livelihood and everything else, and all they do just follow him. You see? You know, with all kind of reasons and hidden agendas. Some of them want him to be the king and deliver them from oppression, you know, which is not an evil desire when you think about it, but on the other hand, that was not the time, that's not the manner, you see? And then others, you know, were hungry and thirsty for truth, and they followed him, and others, you know, were hungry for food, and he was feeding them. But in either case, they followed him. And you find all kind of people like that today. Go to any given congregation, you find all these kind of people there. Some are there just for the food, for the physical things, for the fellowship. You see, because they're lonely, they need to be comforted and encouraged and things like that. And others, you know, come there for the spiritual food. Others, you know, they just need somebody to lead them because, you know, they're in trouble. All kind of reasons like that. And so these people, in either case, followed him, in contrast to the leaders, the high and the mighty, many of them were not interested in following him no matter what. And so when the people therefore saw that Jesus was not there, nor his disciples, they also got into the boats and came to Capernaum seeking Jesus. You see? The Jesus seekers. And when they found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, Rabbi, when did you come here? How did you get here? Now, listen to what Jesus is telling them. You see, this is not the time, you know, to say, oh, wonderful people, you know, you came to look for me. Now he wanted them to realize that when you seek Jesus, a lot of people seeking Jesus, you got to seek him for the right reason, for the right attitude. And so he told them, Jesus answered and said, most assuredly I say to you, you seek me not because you saw the signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. A lot of people seek Jesus, a lot of people seek to worship Jesus because, you know, they're empty in their life and they need to feel good, you see, and they need to sing because that makes people happy. And that's the reason why they worship Jesus. Not because they want to obey him, walk in him, have him live his life in them, change their ways, depart from their old evil ways. Now they want to continue to do their own thing, but they want to seek Jesus so they can have fun, you know, feel good. God is not interested in that kind of worship. That's what he's telling them here. You're, you know, seeking me just for materialism, for selfish needs, selfish interests. I says, don't do it. Do not labor for the food which perishes. Or music, you know, or, you know, the good time that you have, you know, worshiping me. You know, you like to come to churches and sing and have a good time and things like that. He said, don't do that. That's not the reason for it. Do not labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life. So come seek the spiritual food so that you may be filled, so that I may be formed in you. And when you do that, people are going to hate you, obviously, because you don't walk like they do, and you're going to get into all kind of troubles. You see, a lot of people say, no, I'm not interested in troubles, just good time, just fun. You see, fair weather friends. And Christ is not interested in people like that. So he's telling all of us, don't labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures for to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you. That's what he's going to give you. You see, now and then, yeah, he feeds you physically too, because you're a physical being, you need that too. But this is not what you should be after the most. See, so the Son of God is going to give you. And the reason why he should do that, because God the Father has set his seal on him. You see? And because he set his seal on him, he is his son, he does his will, he obeys his commandments, there is inherent life in him too, then he's going to give it to you if you follow him in his footsteps. And then they said to him, "What shall we do that we may work the works of God?" Jesus answered and said to them, "This is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he sent." And some in their ignorance read this, no knowledge, no understanding of the scriptures, they say, "Oh, that means all I have to do is just believe. Just believe in the word, you know, in Jesus Christ, and that's the work of God." That's total ignorance. You see? A lot of people are into that ignorance. A lot of preachers preach that. All you have to do is just believe. That's all, you know. Everybody who's going to believe is going to be saved. He's not interested in that either. That's why he says, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and you do not do what I say?" So you got to take the entirety of the picture in mind, you see, and then you begin to understand what he's talking about at any given point. What happens when you believe in him? When you believe in him, you obey him. You walk in his footsteps. You do his will. You do the will of the Father. You obey his commandments. Otherwise, your faith is meaningless. And most people have that kind of faith. And therefore, they said to him, in verse 30, "What sign will you perform then that we may see it and believe you?" Now that's foolishness. These are the very people that just ate bread and saw that sign and many other things. And again, doesn't mean that all of them had that kind of an attitude. You know, some of them who had this kind of an attitude that no matter what you do for them, you know, they still continue to feel that way. So you have to always understand what is really happening here. It's not that all of them, you know, felt that way. There are always those among them who still were as carnal as it could be, you know, and still had their own thoughts, and faith was not in their hearts or their minds. They were not really seeking their spiritual truth. So it is to them that he's addressing these statements, and they still don't get it. And so they say, "What sign will you perform then that we may see it and believe you? What work will you do? Our fathers ate the manna." In other words, you know, what we're really after, you know, more food. You see? That was their ulterior motive. That's why they talk like that. But that was not necessarily the majority of them. So they say, "Our fathers ate the manna in the desert, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." So notice what they're putting the emphasis on. Food. That's what we're here for. You see? Others were there for other reasons. But these are the people that were there only for the physical things. When he just told them, that's not the thing that you should labor for. Then Jesus said to them, "Most assuredly I say to you, Moses did not give you the bread from heaven." You see? In other words, the food that you got during the days of Moses, to begin with, Moses was not the one that did it. You see? It's God the one that did it and fed his people. But in either case, whatever manna they got at that time was physical. It didn't come from heaven. It didn't come from God. You see? In other words, it's not spiritual food. That's what he means by that. Of course, everything is from God. But he's speaking spiritually here. The manna that Moses gave them was not the Spirit of God. "But my Father gives you the true bread from heaven." And the true bread is Jesus Christ. You see? But at the same time, whatever God gave Moses, whatever Jesus Christ gave Moses, which was spiritual, he gave to Israel. So on one hand, they received spiritual truth, you see, but they did not have a personal relationship with that God. And that's what he's saying here. The Father is offering you me to live my life in you, because God did not live his life in the people of Israel. They were not willing to walk in his footsteps, in his path. They did not want to live by faith. They were just looking for physical things, just like these people that are talking about the manna here. And so this is what he's telling them. "For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." That's why he said, "Unless you eat my bread and drink my flesh, you have no life in you." And how do you do it? You see? How do you do it? Well, he made it very plain. "Man shall live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. If you love me, keep my commandments. Don't think that I came to do away with the Torah of the prophets. I came to fulfill it. Heaven and earth shall pass, but not one jot or one tittle shall pass from the law, and so forth. That's how you eat Jesus Christ. Unless you do it, you see, you're going to be full of whatever, but not truth. And that's unfortunately where most people are. You know, they're just taking, you know, little crumbs from the Word of God, and all the rest is their own concoctions. And they think that they are holy Joes, or holy Marys. Verse 33, for the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. Only that kind of bread will give you life. Not, you know, the vomit that people eat, the teachings of men, the honor of men, perverted teachings. You see, that's not going to give you life. And they said to him, Lord, give us this bread always. Again, they are thinking carnally, bread, bread, bread. That's all they can think about it. You know, so some program, they call a person like that who thinks only with his head, you know, physical things. In other words, they call him meathead. That's what they were. That's what carnal mind mean, you know, meathead. And Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. You see? They're looking for bread like he did before, performing a sign and wonder and miracle, and they all ate. And he's trying to help them understand that it is the spiritual food that they should go after and seek for. And the rest of the things will be taken care of. So he says, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger. And he who believes in me shall never thirst. Again, speaking spiritually. But I said to you that you have seen me, and yet do not believe. Again, he's not talking to all of them. But there were always that group among them that were there only for physical things. You see? And they were not necessarily men of faith, even though they followed him, but they followed him for the wrong reasons, just like the majority of people today. They follow Christ for the wrong reasons. They're not interested in his teachings. You know, maybe interested in some of them, few of those, you know, that make them feel good, but that's it. You know, don't go beyond that. Don't tell me how to live my life. They're not interested in that. And so that was the problem of these people. And so he says, you do not believe me. And that the Father gives me, all that the Father gives me, verse 37, will come to me. You see? Unless the Father calls us, we cannot come to Christ. You cannot decide on your own, well, you know, I decided to join Christ. I decided to serve him. You know, I'm giving my life to the Lord. You know, I've done it when I was 3 years old or 6 or 7. You know, I signed my name on this pamphlet here, and that's it. I gave my life to the Lord. Doesn't work like that. Unless the Father gives you to Jesus Christ, you are not of his. You're just playing games. A lot of people have been taught to play this kind of games by people who themselves are deceitful and don't even know it. And so he says, oh, that the Father gives me. This is where you begin your first step. The Father looks at you and says, I want this person. And he calls you and he puts his spirit in you after you repent, that is. And you are baptized and you turn away from your evil deeds and he gives it to Jesus Christ. For him to live his life in you and to be formed in you through all the entirety of his law. You see, that's a vehicle. And he's the epitome of it. And so that's what he says. And people are reading that and they don't get it. All that the Father gives me will come to me. And the one who comes to me I will by no means cast out. Because the Father gave you to me, you know, whether you're, you know, beautiful, good looking, fat, small, skinny, you know, sickly, whatever it may be. It's neither here nor there. If the Father gave you to Jesus Christ, he's going to take care of you. You see, he's going to live his life in you, and then you'll be glorious, beautiful, you see, wholesome, healthy, and so forth, and powerful. He transforms you, you see, from within, through his law, through his teachings. And that's what he's saying here. This is the will of the Father who sent me, that all he has given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up, you see. What do you mean, raise it up? Bring them back to life. When? At the last day. How many people that you know that call themselves Christians, or you yourself that call yourself Christian, believe that? That Christ is going to raise us at the last day, bring us back to life. Until then, we're dead in the grave. There's a lot of Mary worship out there. You see? Millions and millions of people. To every generation, by the billions of them, when you count all these people that believed, and all the lies and deceptions, that Mary is up in heaven, you can pray to her and she intercedes for you, intervenes for you. Even the present Pope believes that. You see, does not believe a word that proceeds out of the mouth of Jesus Christ and claims to be his vicar. You see how deceived, how deceitful can human beings be? How blind, how ignorant. And everybody believes the same. You see? Among the Protestants, you don't see that much, saint worship or, that manner of idol worship. But, you know, they've got other things. They all believe in going to heaven and all the lies, you know, all the stories, all the fables they tell about it. And then the preacher always, when somebody dies, the preacher's up in heaven. You know, he's not suffering anymore. He's up in heaven. He's looking at us. We can talk to him. And all these lies, ministers of the devil thinking they're ministers of Jesus Christ, deceiving the flock. And the flock just there gobbles it up. You see? Now, when Jesus Christ performs a miracle and multiplies the loaves and the fish and gives you food, you aren't going to die from that. You see, it's good food. And it's holy, and the remnant of it is gathered. But when the ministers of the devil feed you, and you feel that you are filled up, it's garbage that they give you, and you're going to die. That's not going to give you eternal life. And still, a lot of people would rather go the broad way, as Christ said, majority go the broad way. Many are the ones that go there, the majority. But only the very few go through the narrow path, the narrow, straight path. Only few find it. Because only few are really genuine. And these are the ones that the Father seeks for, to worship him in truth, purity of truth, all truth, nothing but the truth, you see, and spirit. And so that's what he's saying here. The ones that the Father gave him, in whom Jesus Christ is going to be formed, even though in the past 2,000 years they all died, you see. But he said, I'm going to raise him, or raise her, at the last day. You see? And if there are any Muslims who are listening, do yourself a favor. Read your Quran. There are dozens and dozens of statements there where Muhammad made it very plain that he's going to be dead in the grave. You see? And the last trump is going to be resurrected. And, you know, since it's not my purpose here is to teach the Quran, you know, there are a lot of good things there and other things which are not necessarily of God. But this thing was of God. And he got it, obviously, from who had the knowledge of the truth, both in the Jewish and the Christian community. This point, at least, they knew that when you go to the grave, you go to the grave and you stay there. So even in the days of Muhammad, in the 6th century, there were still many Jews and Christians who were genuine, that knew the truth. So the doctrine of heaven and hell did not spread throughout the entirety of the community. They were still, especially in the Middle East. You see, in the West, they already believed in all those pagan ideas, Western Christianity, but Eastern Christianity still maintained a greater measure of truth, and still does to this very day. And that's why they divided, among other things, the Eastern religion of Christianity and the Western. You see, so you have the Greek Orthodox and Russian Orthodox, Coptic and things like that, and they've got some differences and divisions, and that's one reason for it. Doesn't mean that everything is right, but in the days of Muhammad, they still believed it. When you die, you die. You go to the grave. You await the resurrection at the last day, when you go into be brought back to life. You are not in heaven. You are not in hell. And that's what he's saying here. And all those who call themselves Christians, you see, the overwhelming majority of them, that is, I'm not speaking but the elect, the very elect or the genuine ones, they don't believe it. They don't believe Jesus Christ. I say, oh, no, Jesus Christ, you're all wrong. You're all wet. You don't know what you're talking about. We know better. My leader told me, my church leader told me, this is the doctrine of my church. When I die, I go to heaven. You see? He says, no. At the end time, in the last day, that's when I'm going to resurrect you, bring you back to life. Until then, you have no immortal soul. Only God has it. You see, verse 41, the Jews then complained about him because he said, I am the bread which came down from heaven. And they said, is not this Jesus? What is he talking about, He's been around all this time. He's Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know. You see, so these people knew his parents. There is no mention of his father throughout his ministry, so most people assume that he's dead. But these people obviously knew his father when he was still alive. And so we know his parents, whose father and mother we know. How is it that he says, I have come down from heaven. You see, if we know you all your life, what do you mean, you know, you came down from heaven? Obviously, they never got it. Jesus therefore answered and said to them, do not murmur among yourselves. No one can come to me. No one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him. No man. What do you find the missionaries? They go everywhere, tell everybody, oh, Jesus loves you. All I have to do is just say, you know, sign your name here. You know, today I accept Jesus Christ. You see? Whose ministers are there? Not of Christ. That's sincere. A lot of them are very good people, devout people, kind people, merciful people, compassionate. Do a lot of good works. And then they're all going to appear before Jesus Christ, claiming, hey, we are his servants too. We preach, you know, in your name, cast demons in your name. We're your people too. And he looks at them and says, I never knew you. Why? You see? Because much of their teachings is not from God. They're doing their own thing. They're teaching, you know, some truth and a lot of error in it. And they're not his people. They're not his servants. You see? They don't go to all those people and say, now, wait a minute. Now, all due respect, as much as we love you, we're going to show the love of Christ toward you, fine. But at the same time, understand, unless, you know, the Father draws you, you cannot have a relationship with him. And until next time, this is Mordecai Joseph.